really Mother's Day. That's an American invention. It happens in May. It's called Mothering Sunday. Although, of course, it's very easy to turn that into Mother's Day. And mothers have been in the news recently, haven't they? Do you remember that sort of off-the-cuff comment that was made by a member of the front benches on the opposition in Prime Minister's Question Time? Ask your mother. To which, of course, Cameron responded, looking straight at the leader of the opposition. You may remember those words. Probably a pre-cooked joke. He said, I know what my mother would say. Put on a proper suit, straighten up your tie, and sing the national anthem. But as I say, it isn't really about mothers. It's about mothering. And lots of people mother, even if they're not the natural born mother. They show mothering instincts. They look after people, as we were reminded in the beginning. They care for people, and caring is a motherly kind of attitude or behavior. Now, the first two chapters of Exodus, which is where this story comes from, the women are the real actors. It's very interesting. Here's an Old Testament book that begins with two chapters talking about women, and the men are never even named. They're in the background more than in the center of the action. And the chief activists in the first part of the story are the midwives. Do you remember Joseph? You probably heard some stories about Joseph. Joseph was the man who was sent into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous. And he was made a slave in Egypt. But he was a very capable individual, and he rose through the ranks to become the second in command in the country. And he was responsible for helping the Pharaoh, the king, to look after all of the food and produce that was produced in the country and to store it so that when the famine came, there would be food to eat. Well, now, several generations have passed since Joseph was there, and there's a new Pharaoh in the land. And the Bible tells us this Pharaoh didn't even know anything about Joseph. Joseph had faded into history. And what had happened was Joseph's descendants had grown so many in number that they were beginning to compete with the native Egyptians. The immigrants were almost as large in number as those who were naturally born in that country. That's a phenomenon we're fairly familiar with today, isn't it? With immigrants taking over. And so the Pharaoh, quite worried about this growth of these people, decided to make it difficult for these people so that they wouldn't continue to grow. So he increased their burden as slaves. Now, as it happened, that didn't help at all. In fact, it just made them thrive even more. So then he turned to these midwives and he said, look, when you attend the birth of any child born of a Hebrew mother, if it's a boy that pops out, strangle it. If it's a girl, let them live. That's kind of kind, isn't it? But that was one way he thought he'd be able to control the numbers of this growing population of immigrants. But that didn't even help either, because the midwives went to Pharaoh and said, it doesn't work. These Hebrew women are so healthy that by the time we get to them, they've already had a birth, the child has really already been born, and they've sent them off with their aunt or their grandmother. So there's nothing we can do about it. Now, they perhaps were conspiring a little bit in this, but if you've got a healthy body, it may be possible for that to happen. And so the midwives were unable to control the population either. And at that point, Pharaoh became very angry. And he said, in that case, anyone who sees a Hebrew boy is to toss them in the river. Can you imagine? It's called ethnic cleansing today, isn't it? Decimating the population of immigrants to prevent them from having the kind of freedoms and privileges that those who feel they own the country actually enjoy. And that's what went on. Now, here we have this lovely little story of one Hebrew mother giving birth to a baby. And in a sense, following the letter of the law, she pushed her baby off into the river. But she thought ahead and she made a basket, covered it with tar so that it would not sink, placed the baby gently in the basket, and then I suspect rather gently pushed it off the edge of the river where it settled into the reeds, thinking that perhaps that was the safest thing because no one would discover a baby already in the river. It was already where Pharaoh had told told everybody it should be tossed. I don't know how long the time passed, but clearly fairly soon after that, Pharaoh's daughter was down at the riverside bathing, and she could hear this murmuring, this noise, this crying of a child. And she discovered the baby in the water, in that basket, took it out. Now, Pharaoh's daughter would have known what the rules were. Here's a Hebrew boy, toss him in the river. But her motherly instinct kicked in. And she thought to herself, what mother can do that to a child? And rather than throwing that child back into the river, she held it in her arms. And when Miriam, the sister of that child, saw what was going on and realized that the Pharaoh's daughter had the child's interest at heart, she came across and said, would you like me to find you someone who could nurse this child? And that's what happened. And there's some irony in this story, because actually what happened was, when the child's mother was brought to Pharaoh's daughter, Pharaoh's daughter asked her if she would nurse him and offered to pay. Now, the Hebrews were slaves. They were paid nothing. They were just asked to work. And here now we have Pharaoh's daughter paying a Hebrew slave to raise their own son. There's a second irony of the story as well. Very interesting. After the child has weaned, the child is brought to Pharaoh's daughter, and Pharaoh's daughter adopts the child as her own and takes her into Pharaoh's palace to raise him as their own child. Can you imagine what's going on? Here is a Hebrew boy whom Pharaoh had said should have been thrown in the river and slaughtered, now growing up in the palace of the very Pharaoh who had issued that edict. This story is a lovely story of women, each acting out of their motherly instinct for the interest of a child, who ultimately, because of that opportunity that was given to him, became the one who would lead his people out of bondage in Egypt into the freedom that God had promised in the promised land. It's a fascinating little story. One of the ways we might think about that story is through some ideas that were suggested by James Cass, who's an American philosopher. He wrote a very interesting book about 20 years ago called Finite Games and Infinite Games. One of the things that mothers do is they never give up. They never lose hope. And they will always look for some opportunity to work for the betterment of their child. Now, what Cass is saying is that most of the games we play in life are finite games. If you think about sports, of course, sports games have rules and regulations, and they have time. You know, a 90-minute football game, a 5-day test match, whatever it may be. There's always a time period to the game, and during the game, everybody plays to the rules. Now, if we think of life like those kind of games, we've missed the point. James Cass is saying, life is a playing of an infinite game. That is a game that does not end, that goes on and on and on. And the rules keep changing as the game is being played. I suggest to you that these mothers in this story were playing an infinite game. They were interested more than anything else, not in the rules that had been set by the Pharaoh, by the king, but in the welfare of the child. And in thinking about the welfare of the child, they had to be inventive. They had to be imaginative. They had to think again, what could we do to get around these rules? Because the greater interest is in the welfare of the child. How do we secure the interests of the child over the rules of the game that have been set? And together, two of them probably not even of childbearing age, they were able to bring that child through those difficult and horrendous circumstances to new life. See, most of the games that we are forced to play in life are zero-sum games. There are always winners and losers. And James Cass is saying that shouldn't be the characteristic of life. We should be working together with each other for the good of all, that all will be winners and there will be no losers. And I think the story in Exodus is a beautiful example of that motherly instinct that was true of all of the people in the story who enabled Moses to thrive and as a result led to the freedom of God's people. 8 years ago, Paul Howden wrote a book called Blessed Unrest, a fascinating story of what I would consider to be the way motherly instinct works in our contemporary world. The subtitle of the book is, it's a celebration of everything's going right in the world. Don't read those books very often, do you? But many of the stories that he's talking about in that book are happening below the radar. They're not being monitored by the media. We don't hear about them. But he estimates that maybe more than 1 million small groups, individuals around the world are, if you like, in terms that we're talking about this morning, exhibiting a motherly instinct for the good of those around them, in their families, in their neighborhoods, in their communities. And this is a huge phenomenon. He said it's the greatest movement that's ever happened in our world. People who are acting for the good of others, taking care of them, acting for life rather than for death, healing the wounds of our planet, using imagination and wisdom and courage to do so. And the interesting point is, most of those initiatives are run by women. They're following their motherly instinct. They're playing a long game. They're playing an infinite game for the good of all. So today, on Mothering Sunday, we celebrate mothers who defy the deathly forces that would deny life, that create spaces for us not only to survive but to thrive, mothers who sow the seeds of hope, midwives who are there to help give birth to the greatest of our dreams, sisters who show up just when we need them, and adopted mothers who, like Pharaoh's daughter, pulls us out of dangerous waters and gives us the opportunity to fulfill our greatest potential. Let's celebrate the mothering instinct. Amen.